Welcome back. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour. We are talking with Judy Byington about the case of Jenny Hill. Yeah, 22 faces, if you will, in the history of ritual abuse and the connection to the mind control programs, CIAs, etc., MKUltra and all the other ones there. And I wanted to ask a bit more about, you know, Jenny today, basically. There was a prospect of potentially even bringing her on the program, actually, with us today. But I think she declined, or she's in hiding. How's she doing today, Judy?
She's doing fine. She prefers not to be out in public. You can imagine what it's like for her. Here she has exposed her lifetime of abuse by various perpetrators, and it's all out in the public, and it's been a difficult thing for her to adjust to, as it would be for anybody. She prefers not to do interviews and has asked that I do them for her.
Definitely. Now, how long did this happen to Jenny? When did it stop, and what, you know, why did it stop, basically? Was it because of a certain age? I mean, I've heard this as well, that it prolongs up to a certain age, then in some cases people are disposed of. In some cases that hasn't been successful, but then you have a breakdown, as you said before, kind of of the mind at a certain age when these barriers begin to falter, allegedly. But what happened to Jenny in this case?
Well, Jenny's ritual abuse stopped after her ceremony that she went to, where she saw this other girl murdered, and she was saved from being killed herself. After that, to my knowledge, she had no other types of ritual abuse. She was abused by her father, as she alleges, until she was a preteen. And then when it looked like she might become pregnant, she alleges that he stopped that abuse. So her story kind of ends down there in her preteen years.
I see.
As the abuse is concerned, anyway.
Right, exactly. Do you know if she's been, I don't know, followed? Had people tried to take her out, potentially, because of her knowledge? Or what has happened there?
Well, she's essentially in hiding, and I don't know if she's had any encounters. She hasn't told me that she has. I have, because of some of the work I have done. But I think people that are into this pretty much stay away from the survivors, especially if they have publicity on their story. I think her being able to publish her story probably was a great protection for her, because if something happens to her, they can pretty much trace to, you know, who the perpetrators might be. I think keeping quiet about it is actually puts a survivor in more danger, because then, and I've heard this from survivors too, that they are continually being accessed by their perpetrators and told things. I have a lot of survivors who I communicate with all the time, and they're always, their perpetrators are always trying to access them and trying to keep them quiet and trying to get them not to talk about their stories. One of the things that I think has really helped is being on Amazon, because there some of the survivors come in to Jenny's story, and we've had a lot of what appear to be perpetrators come in and try to discount Jenny's story, and then survivors will come in and give their side of it, and they can do that in a safe environment, you know, by giving comments on the internet, and it really helps them to stand up to their perpetrators,
right?
Because there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's what I kind of said in the beginning. There's a lot of back and forth on this. It's a battle going on here and that's understandable for obvious reasons, if there's people who want to try to cover this up. And at the same time, you have, well, let me ask you this, and I don't mean to take anything away from the story that you've shared with us so far, but as you work with this, have you ever get approached by people whom you suspect have actually not been through some of these scenarios, effectively making it up, or is everyone that you've talked to and that you've investigated always, you know, telling the truth and they have the full story? I mean, to what extent do we account for, let's say, confusion or not recalling everything correctly? What where do you draw the line there, Judy? Difficult question, I know, but what do you think?
Like I say, there's no such thing as false memory syndrome. There's never been a valid study done on it. They claim there has been, but the professionals say no. These memories are so specific when they come back that it's pretty difficult to discount what happened. Like when I was working with these women and we'd go out to sites where they had seen these murders, they could remember things that would correspond with other things, and then I'd do some research on it and find out what they were saying was absolutely spot on. To tell you the truth, I have never found yet a survivor who has created a memory that is false. They don't want to have these memories. They are it's something that's made their life very, very difficult. Often what will happen is a person like Jenny can function very well. I mean, she went to college. She got her nursing degree. I know other survivors that have gone in and got two or three master's degrees. And they function very well until their memories start coming back. And then they have to deal with these horrible, horrible abuse situations. When repressed memories come back, all the feelings and even the physical part of the abuse comes back. It's called repressed body memories. I have a friend, for instance, who was hung on a cross as a little girl by her wrists. And when the memory of that came back, the memory of the physical abuse in her wrist also came back, and she actually had to have an operation on both of her wrists for carpal tunnel after that memory came back. It's called repressed body memories. So it's very difficult for me to understand people who say, you know, these memories can be false. Nobody wants to go through this. Nobody wants to go through the what these survivors are going through when they have these repressed memories. And often having these memories come back will make them a lot less functional as human beings, because they're dealing with all this abuse. And it takes years and years and years of therapy to get them back to where they were before the memories started to come. So this false memory thing to me is just a complete crock. And it's perpetrated. We know with the False Memory Foundation, for instance, that there are people who have advocated for pedophilia that are on the board. This Randy.org that's chased me on the internet, he's a member of the board. There are people in there who have been accused of child abuse. And so, and then they go out and they defend perpetrators in court. They have a lot of money, and they'll go around the country and they'll defend perpetrators. And they've actually won some cases saying that these children have had false memories. It's been amazing what they've been able to do. But as far as the survivors are concerned, there is no such thing as a false memory.
Right, and you've not encountered anybody who, as you researched, you investigated that he didn't add up or something like that, or that the proof wasn't there?
I haven't. Maybe somebody else has, but I haven't in my work.
Right, right. So if I understand correctly, many of these memories then that are recalled, they to a certain extent have a natural tendency to, you know, leak out, for the lack of a better term. But do you use hypnosis, regression, or anything similar to go further and deeper into this, or maybe you know other people who do?
I don't know anybody that uses hypnosis. Most of the survivors I've been come equated with, the reason they go to therapy is because they begin having the memories, and they usually come back in nightmares. Like they'll have a reoccurring nightmare, and each night it will get more and more detailed. And then as they get more and more of these memories coming back, then they go to the therapist and try to figure out what's going on.
Right.
To say that a therapist could create a false memory is ridiculous. Nobody can create false memories in people. I mean, that would give you untold power over people if you could create a false memory with them. But every survivor I know, the memories have come back before they've gone to the therapist.
Now, in other scenarios, other cases that I've looked into, that there have been, shall we say, part of the elite establishment have showed up in some of these rituals and you know, celebrities and all kinds of, you know, very, very bizarre recallings of people have been mentioned to participate in some of these activities. Now, is there anything of this sort, this nature, that came up in the case of Jenny Hill?
No, not in her case. It didn't. I've certainly heard about it from other survivors. And you have two scenarios going on here. One is the perpetrators are very, very adept at trying to prove that what the child is going through didn't happen. They will dress up as certain people, and they will even have the insides of buildings look like certain places, and they will abuse the children, especially sacred sites. You know, they will build a building that looks like, for instance, the inside of a temple in the LDS church, and then they will have children there that they will abuse, and they will dress up people that are to make them look like certain church leaders, and then those certain church leaders, you know, certain perpetrators will abuse the child, and then as the child grows up, they will think, hey, you know, I've been abused by this person, you know, in this place, when actually it was just a big show, a big, you know, thing that the perpetrators did to try to cover up what they were doing. Then you do have people that are very high up, that have a lot of recognition and power and money, that are involved in this. And I know from mind control survivors that there are certain people in the political realm that have been involved in these child pedophile rings and have actually abused them. And then they have, you know, used that information to get more money or certain bills passed in the Congress, and they will blackmail them with the information. And so, you know, you have both spectrums. You have, you know, the false idea that, you know, the child has gone through this with an important person, and then you have the children that have actually gone through it with the more people that are well known. Because there are, well, Kevin Annette, for instance, we have a coalition. I have a coalition, childabuserecovery.com. We have a coalition between Neil Brick, who runs SMART, that's a mind control organization, very large mind control survivor group, and CAR, which is Child Abuse Recovery, and Kevin Annette, who is with the ITCCS, and they have survivors that have come to them who have involved some pretty important people in child sacrifices. And Kevin Annette is working with that right now with common law courts. But yeah, you have both spectrums, especially in Europe.
So is there any connection to LDS, Latter-day Saints, Mormons up there in Utah? Is there a connection to this? Is this why some investigations were made, you know, from this organization? Or how can you unravel that for us?
The LDS Church itself is the only large organization that I know of that's really looked into this and tried to do something about it through this 1990 study that they did. There are perpetrators in all religions and in all cultures and in all countries that are into this. And no, I don't think LDS or the church itself is into it at all. In fact, they'll excommunicate anybody that's for a lot lesser things than murder and raping a child. They just excommunicate them and get them out of the church. And that's what they did after they did the study. They, mm-hmm. when they find perpetrators, they just excommunicate them from the church. They don't let them become members. So I don't see a connection there. I do know that there are perpetrators that happen to be LDS, just as there are perpetrators that happen to be Catholic or happen to be Baptist. So, you know, the church isn't completely cleansed, but at least they're trying to do something about it.
Now, how would you describe one of these satanic rituals, if you can, one of the meetings? I mean, if there is a common MO here, I mean, do they usually have masks, maybe to a certain extent hide their identity? If we again make visual comparisons, is it anything like we've seen in, for example, you know, the movie Eyes Wide Shut, that type of scenario, or does it look very different? What do you think?
Well, I couldn't see that movie. I didn't want to see it. It was just too much like I had some knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jenny's scenario is pretty typical, and that's where they dress in black robes with hoods on them. They paint their faces black with white rings around their eyes, you know, so that you can't really tell who they are. And the room is completely dark. It's only lit by candles. And a fire, which they use to burn the bodies in and things like that, usually done at night, although her ceremony was done at high noon. They're done on specific days, by the way. But, yeah, the typical scenario is what you think of being as satanic. And the formation that they use is they'll usually have a child orgy, sex orgy, prior to the ceremony. That may be the day before, or it may be, you know, right before they have the ceremony, but they'll always sexually abuse the children that come to the ceremony. And then they'll have the ceremony, which is essentially a torture of children's ceremony. And they'll end up killing a child and killing animals in the ceremony. And then it's all for this feeling of power and glory and having power over other people is what it's done for.
Now, Judy, are you a believer in the supernatural, I guess we could say?
My personal beliefs is that we have God who created this earth that is good, and we also have Lucifer who is very much trying to get people on his side. And so we have both forces of good and evil on this earth. They're working against each other with these ritual abuse survivors.
Well, that's interesting. So from your point of view, when we talk about these rituals, are there real power in this, or is it strictly a theater of sorts, but it actually works very, very powerfully on the psyche, then specifically on a child, or is there more to it than that?
Well, all I can tell you is the experiences I've heard from survivors, because obviously I've never been to a ceremony.
Right, right.
What they say is one of the things they do in this ceremony is they drink the blood of the victim. And obviously when a victim is under torture or know that they're about to be killed, they're going to have a lot of adrenaline in their blood. And the survivors say that drinking this blood that has adrenaline in them seems to give these people some kind of a high. It also gives them some kind of a high to actually have this control and power over, you know, these little children. As far as the evil spirits are concerned, I've also heard stories about that. My personal belief is that we were all spirits before we came to this earth, and that we were given a choice whether to come down to this earth and be tested in order to live with Heavenly Father again. And some spirits chose not to do that. They chose to follow Lucifer, who didn't want us to have a choice. And so Heavenly Father said, well, then you can't have bodies. So it's my personal belief that there are spirits around here that really want bodies, and they are able to enter the bodies of people in these satanic ceremonies through, you know, these secret combinations and all this other crap that they do in the ceremony. And they actually have evil spirit takeovers. I know Jenny's experience, and I've heard this from other survivors, is that they do have times when evil spirits have entered their bodies. I have a very good survivor friend that says she feels like her abuse caused some kind of a thing to open inside her that allows easier access to evil spirits where they can come into their bodies. And of course, at the LDS Church, we also have kind of a blessing where we can, you know, release those evil spirits back to where they go. And I know of several instances where that has happened. So I do think that, and I really think, as I've tried to think this through, what would be the reason why a survivor could be more easily accessed by an evil spirit? And I think it's because of their low ego, their low self-esteem, that somehow that helps an evil spirit enter their body a lot easier. But it's a very short period of time. It's not like it's something that they can, you know, continually live in the body. And certainly, all I can do is talk from, you know, what other survivors have told me is that
sure.
by giving blessings, or I know in the Catholic Church they have exorcism rites or whatever, where these evil spirits can leave. And Jenny had some experiences in the state hospital. We didn't talk about them in the book, but she had three or four different experiences at the state hospital. And they called in the elders, the LDS elders, and they came and gave her a blessing, and the evil spirits left her body. But this Dr. Wycott that treated her was witness to some of those evil spirit takeovers, and so he attests to them also.
Regarding adrenaline that you mentioned, I've read a little bit about this too, and I've heard that there are people who are, you know, addicted to adrenochrome, as it's called, a compound produced by the oxidation of adrenaline. And adrenochrome is basically synthesized by the oxidation of epinephrine. You know, there's some people out there, allegedly, there are, you know, they get high on that stuff, of course. But there are several small-scale studies that have been done in the 50s and 60s reporting that, you know, adrenochrome triggered psychotic reactions, you know, thoughts, disorder, derelization, euphoria, all kinds of stuff. So it could be also, one explanation could also be that people are literally getting, you know, high off of other people's adrenal glands, pretty much, which is, of course, a very horrible thing. I'm not trying to laugh at it in any way, but it's that could literally be one of the bigger components here to it as well, that there is this becomes like a drug to certain people that have become accustomed to it, correct?
Correct. And another thing that we didn't talk about was the drugs. There's always drugs involved. They always give the children drugs. They always take drugs. And the high off those drugs can also, you know, be causing some of those feelings too.
Now, let's see here. I wanted to ask you about secret societies a little bit, if in your view of what you've heard, if any of this is connected to any of the secret societies out there, or if there's maybe something that is operating, you know, within that, the secret society infrastructure, but it might not be identified with one of them, if you know. But is there any known orders or anything like that that's connected to this kind of activity in far as what you've heard, Judy?
All I can say is what the survivors have told me. And, well, first of all, we know that the CIA used different, you know, places to do their programs. They used universities. They also used religious groups, they said. And I think, obviously, some of those were satanic covens that they used because they were using this Hitler's Luciferian concept in their mind control program. So they were obviously using satanic covens. I have heard from survivors that some of those secret societies involved the Masons. I had a personal experience with a literary agent over that. I think my own personal feelings about the Masonic orders are that probably 99% of Masons are very good, great people, but the upper echelon, when they go into the Royal Arch and become Master Masons, that's where, and I had a person who actually did this, who went into the Royal Arch, and he said that's where the ceremonies turned from white to black. And he wouldn't tell me any more about that. This was a literary agent I had, and I had the story behind that is he had asked for my manuscript, and I sent it off to him. And right after I sent it off to him, there was a newspaper article that came out about a man, and he talked about Sherwood Broom was his name, my literary agent. And in the newspaper article, he talked about Sherwood Broom, and he says, oh, and by the way, he's a master mason. And I had just sent my manuscript off to him, and I just about crumbled. Then I thought, oh, my goodness, I've sent off my manuscript to a master mason. He called me after he'd read the manuscript, and he said, Judy, you absolutely have to get this book published. And I said, well, that surprises me because I had heard that you were a master mason. And he says, no, I retired from the Masons after I went through the Royal Arch. And he says, I won't say anything more about that except that you absolutely have to get this book published.
All right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So the book is dedicated to Angeletta, obviously, and this is the girl who was sacrificed, correct?
Correct. That was the name that they gave her.
Okay.
Angeletta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And has there been any, investigations on this from the point of view of the police, confirmations in terms of a case that mimics this? I mean, as we know, there is. I don't have the numbers now, but we brought this up a couple of times in the program of how many, millions of people that have, gotten lost in the United States alone, children who are just, they disappear, they're never found again. This could just be one of those cases, of course, but has there been any other investigation done into this and an identification of who this actually was have been established to a certain degree?
What happened with that is that Jenny and I, were writing the book, and we were trying to find out who this girl was. So I went into the Center for Missing Children site, and we knew that she was a blue-eyed blonde. But the blonde hair appeared to be a fake. It was that bright blonde that you get, when you dye your hair that way. So I went into the Center for Missing Children site, and I found the pictures of six different girls that were 6 years old when they were kidnapped or went missing. And I presented them to Jenny, and I had her look at them. And she took quite a while. She took like a week or so, to look at those pictures. And then she called me one day, and she said, it's Kathleen Shea. Now, Kathleen Shea was the only one of those six girls that went missing 3 months prior to this satanic ceremony where the child was killed. And she was a little girl up in Tyrone, Pennsylvania. She had blue eyes. She had brown hair. But like I say, it could have been dyed. So I contacted the cold case detective up there. And he reopened the case, and looked into it. There weren't any charges that were made at that point. And I don't know what they're doing with it at this point. I do know that both of the parents are deceased. So whether or not they put it back in the file or whether or not they're actively working on it, I don't know. I did contact them. I sent them a copy of the manuscript. I did contact the detectives down in Garden Grove, California, sent them a manuscript. So both police forces are aware of the situation. And I know that the perpetrators for Jenny are still alive and, by the way, are Masons down in Garden Grove. But whether or not the police or detectives are doing anything about the case, I have no knowledge. And they wouldn't tell me anyway if they were. That isn't how investigations work. So that's the situation as far as I know it.
if the you know, police and certain, you know, aspects of the legal establishment are kind of weaved into this also, let's say they would be protected, obviously the activity that's going on here would be protected. So how would you go about exposing this or trying to raise, you know, people's awareness to this if it's connected with the legal system?
Any way you can.
Right.
I think Jenny's story has helped that to some effect. I've worked with the Utah Attorney General's Office Special Investigations Unit on it. I know that, and it was interesting when I worked with the special investigators, they were aware that there were policemen in certain police departments that were part of this whole thing. And they were very wary of how I would even give them information. So we have a certain system that we use to, when I give them information. Of course, they don't give me anything back, so I don't know what they do with it. But I can't even call them or email them on information that I have. We have another way of giving it to them because they themselves know that there are people around that are part of all of this, and it would interfere with their investigation if the people knew that, you know, what I was giving them.
Yeah.
Survivors say, I go to this and I go to this and I've gone to this policeman and gone to this one, and the information has never gone any further. And some of that is the fact of this big denial we have in our systems that this isn't going on. And so detectives have a rough time. You know, you can't really blame some of them because they're talking about murders that have happened 20, 30 years ago. There's no victim that they can identify. All the evidence has been destroyed sometimes within minutes of the ceremony. Everything's cleaned up and gone, and you'd never find it again. They're very adept at what they do. We were able to identify this Kathleen Shea, but a lot of the children that they murder or throw away children. Some of them are even bred for the purpose. They will impregnate their own teenagers or people in the Coven and then take the babies and sacrifice them. There are some people that are doctors that will get a child through adoption and sacrifice them. I mean, they're very adept at what they do. And so an investigator has a rough time trying to, you know, piece everything together, especially when there isn't any evidence of a crime that was committed 30 years ago.
Yeah, indeed. Did you know of anything of Ted Gunderson's work? And, you know, he was connected with some of the Senator John DeCamp, the Franklin cover-up, anything like this. Are you familiar with their work?
I am. I've read about them. I don't have any personal contact with them. The Franklin cover-up is kind of an iconic case. This David Sturter is a ritual abuse survivor who has a book out called Rabbit Hole. And he actually lived during that period of time. And so his book is very interesting to read on that. But there are certainly other people that have come out and done some very good work on this. But we're fighting a big system.
No, I mean, unfortunately, Ted Gunderson passed away in 2011. But again, there's a lot of these loose, you know, connected dots out there, if you will, or you can connect the dots by people who've done this kind of work, and you find that there is a similarity, there's a pattern in this, and in some extent, this work, you know, goes all the way up to the White House, for Christ's sake, you know, and down to very, very more minute, you know, small level players, if you will. But it seems to be a network that's very much established, and some people have said that it's a worldwide satanic network that has, you know, the business of enticing children into this, basically pedophilia and everything else you can imagine, all kinds of horrible stuff.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why we have this coalition with Child Abuse Recovery and Neil Brick Smart and Kevin Annette's ITCCS, is that we're trying to expose international child kidnapping and sex abuse rings. Very huge problem and very difficult to do. I mean, Kevin Annette has run into a lot of problems just because he's trying to expose all of this. He's a very interesting person. He set up these common law courts and actually tried a lot of these bigwigs for. Well, I don't know if you want to go into that, but Kevin Ed is a reverend.
Yeah, we've had him on in the past a couple of times. Yeah, definitely we know about him and his work, and we have a couple of shows there as well that we can detail for people who want to know more about his work and that. And I don't mean to steer away from this, but I wanted to ask you a little bit more as well, because some of these things have kind of surfaced in a few cases of these big scandals that they have gained somewhat of big attention, but the lid is put on very, very quickly afterwards. We have, of course, in Holland, the Martin Dutro case. We have over in Jersey, was it back in 2008 now? I forget the name of the daycare center as well. And some of the people who have been working within this have allegedly said, again, that there was these centers were basically supplying children, to various rituals and to various people who came about, and this particular one was in Jersey, I think, was actually an orphanage, Hot de la Gren or something. I maybe mispronounced that name, but now and then they come to the surface, and you can see the tip of the iceberg, I believe. But why is it, do you think, that this is not like catching on, like after these cases come to the surface? It seems to just, the lid comes on very quickly afterwards. It's forgotten until maybe a few years later down the road, something similar kind of pops up,
Uh-huh. Well, there's some big people in some very high places that are covering up. There's no doubt about that. I've seen that with Kevin Annett a lot, especially in this last one where he has a second witness that has come out about child sacrifice where the former Pope Ratzinger was at. And since then, they've really come down on him. And it's just very real. It just tells you that, yeah, this is going on, and yeah, these people are involved, or why would they try to cover it up?
Yeah, indeed. Now, let me ask you a little bit more here as we begin to round things up here in a little bit here. How you think that those people who are suffering from alter personalities, who have had, have participated or, involuntarily, of course, in these kinds of rituals and everything else, how they can function and begin to heal? Is that something that your work has been about as well, to kind of try to make people heal psychologically from these events?
Well, certainly Jenny has had a great deal of healing occur since she's been able to publish her story. I think keeping all this inside and not being able to talk about it, or not being believed, or having people look at you like you're crazy, is a lot more destructive than being able to come out and expose it. And it's certainly the case for Jenny. She, all her life, you can imagine what it's like for a little child to be continually tortured and raped throughout childhood and not have any knowledge of what was going on, just know that it was going on, and not being able to talk about it because they've threatened you with your life if you tell, or they threatened to kill members of your family if you tell. And that's what they did with her. They told her that they would kill her family members. And so she says, I was able to go through this because I felt like I was saving my family by doing what they told me to do. And then growing up and being rejected by society and not being able to talk about your experiences. And then all of a sudden, you have a book that comes out, and it just exposes everything to the world. And what a great relief that was for her. She was just so excited when the book came out to finally have it published and finally let other people know that, hey, she's just not this crazy person. She actually went through this, and this is what had caused her to have multiple personalities. But then she was met with all this denial. Denial by her family that this had actually happened, and denial by people around her that it actually happened. And so that was something she had to adjust to, but it was a learning process for her, and it was a healing process for her. And that is what makes you heal. I don't know that you ever really, this you know, these movies come out like Sybil and they supposedly integrate all these personalities. Mm-hmm. I don't know of a multiple, I probably know over 100 multiple personalities, and I don't know anyone that has actually been able to truly integrate their personalities. There may be one or two around. I just don't happen to know them. Because, and I, to me, it's it must be a very physical thing that happens to the brain, because this integration doesn't appear to occur. But the healing is that they are aware of it. They have processed their memories. They can try to put it behind them and go on and lead normal lives. Like I say, I have a friend who has 50 multiple personalities, and her neighbors would have no idea that happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
She has gone through years and years and years of healing, and she functions extremely high. She's a lecturer. She's written a book, and she's writing another one. But it's all because she put the energy into healing. Where others refuse to accept the memories, and it literally makes them sicker if they can't face, you know, what's happened to them. So healing is very, very important, but it's important that you face what's gone on and then try to educate those around you what's gone on, because our society is in such denial that anything like this could ever happen. That it actually helps the perpetrators to continue the process of what they're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of denial of these kinds of things, and people just don't want to look at it. You know, it's too uncomfortable, and it's too. And I think in that process as well, a lot of people are doing it a disservice, because I think it's easier to just discredit it and scoff at it and say, ah, you know, whatever, it's nothing to that, and thereby they don't have to, you know, bother by it or look into it further. But the fact is that, you know, as I said, a lot of these pedophilia cases have been coming to the surface, and usually a very, very, you know, ugly connection comes with that, that has this very, very, connectivity to ritual abuse and things like that. So what do you think could be done to spread the word further about this, to get people to, and it's not that everyone needs to, you know, run around and look at this all the time either. That's not what I'm saying. But just to get that general awareness that this is something that's going on. I mean, my point has always been, if more people knew about this and can see the patterns of it, maybe they could see it if it was something that was happening, you know, in their surrounding in some capacity, and something that's being, you know, covered up or whatnot, and thereby helping to expose some of these rings. But what do you think, Judy? What would bring more attention and recognition to this topic?
Well, I think of an understanding for number one, and of course I'm going to push my book, 22 Faces. I think it gives a very good idea of what it's like to be multiple and why this happened to Jenny and how it happened. And in the back of the book, there's a history also that you can read, but I think that's one way that you can do it, and that's 22faces.com. Another way that could be done is we have a petition. And when I say we, I'm talking about this coalition of Neil's Smart website and Kevin Annette and myself on child abuse recovery. And the petition is we represent literally thousands of survivors. Kevin Annette's organization is huge, and so is Neil Bricks. And as representing those survivors, we have a petition on the Child Abuse Recovery website asking Congress for an investigation of the CIA mind control program. And we have been working with senators. Several senators are interested in this, but they're taking a look at this petition and seeing how enthusiastic people are about this situation. And so one of the ways that you could really help us is to go in and sign this petition, and it just takes a click on your little mouse to do it, and then read some of those comments on the petition, and you'll find out a lot of information about what's actually going on right now with this program. But that's two ways you can do it. And then the third one would be just to Google ritual abuse and mind control and multiple personalities on the internet, and you will literally find hundreds of books of by multiple personalities or by professionals in the field that are dealing with this. And I think it will open up your mind to what is really going on. I mean, the problem is huge and there's a lot of information out there, but people just haven't been able to understand how large of a program it is. So do your research and look into it. And in that way, you're going to be more aware of those around you who may be victims of this program. I know when I started working with this, I was living in Orem, Utah, and I counted 30 people who had multiple personalities within walking distance of my home. And the only reason I knew that was because they knew I was working with this, and so they could then approach me and say, you know, hey, this happened to me. And the same kind of situation happened when I moved out to where I am, is that I've had several people come up to me and say, you know, this happened to me or this happened to a friend. Had a woman today tell me that she had had a friend whose ex-husband was into this, and she has been she's scared for her life right now because he's done various things to try to kill her and murder her. And she can't go to the police about it because the things he does, you know, she's not able to get investigations. But what I'm saying is it's all over the place. And once you educate yourself on it, then you will find those around you that may be victims of the program, and then you can reach out and try and help them.
All right. Let me give out the websites here again, childabuserecovery.com. And for more on the book, then specifically 22faces.com. And in the meantime, I'll say thank you, Judy, to you for coming on, talking about some of the aspects of this story with us. We appreciate your time. So thank you for coming on, Judy.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to advertise this extreme problem that we have. And I appreciate the opportunity of you having me on your program.
All right, friends, listeners, and members, we say thank you for listening. We're going to be back in just a few days with Joseph Farrell and Scott D. Hart. We're going to get deep into the trenches of transhumanism, and we have many more guests lined up after this. Keep an eye on the website for the latest, or of course, subscribe to our RSS feeds and let our material come directly to you. Until next time, we say thank you, stay well, and take care.